Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Rhiannon Higgins, good afternoon.
How are you, Brendan?
I'm great, thanks. Rhiannon, our listeners have enjoyed your poems on the show over the last few years, and you saw us through some difficult times. And you've a new collection out now, and some of the poems are ones people will have heard here, and there's some old ones and some new ones too. And it's called The Long Weekend. You kind of set it up like a calendar, have you? It's the to go with the rhythms and the rituals of the year.
Of the calendar year, yes. And that idea was the Gill team have been residing in my head for the past year, and they're wonderful. They're a wonderful
team. I don't envy them. Yeah.
I know. And Teresa Daly brought this thing to me first about the calendar year, you know, interpreting the calendar year through poems. And that's what the book is about, really.
And there's a sense as well, and I think it's how a lot of us see the year, of darkness, light, going through darkness to light and all that.
Yes. And the poems then, like, I had to write some especially for it, as apart from the ones I had done with you, which were like already baked. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that was the easy part. So then I'd have to consider how I felt after Christmas. You know that dark period a few days after Christmas?
Mm-hmm.
That's not a time I love. So I was able to weave that into a poem, and then other poems would bring back memories, and, you know, that came into it. So it was fine for me to do it.
Yeah.
And it brought up stuff.
It did, didn't it? Yeah. Because you're great as an observer of other people. This is a bit more personal.
It is, yes. I never use the personal pronoun I to such a, it's the first person singular.
Yeah.
And I used it a lot in this because I've never used it really in any of my collection. My poems weren't about me before. But they are many of them here are, you know, and especially you see the father poems, and that's kind of obvious.
So, yeah, the father bit is interesting. So before we get to him, right?
Okay.
So I know you hadn't a lot growing up the lane in Ballybrit there, but that was kind of an idyllic childhood in a way, wasn't it?
I thought so. I had a very happy childhood. I really loved that. Those cottages near the racecourse where you loved your neighbours were so good to you as well, like your mother's friends. And you got to go to the races, you know, every year.
Yeah.
It was great.
And then when you're thinking back on that and thinking back on you and the child, are some of these poems then you now in talking to the child kind of, yeah?
That's it. Like it's Rita Garr, you know, it's younger me.
Yeah.
And it's me as an adult as well. You know, it's a completely different thing for me to do. And I hope it works.
And does it resolve things for you?
I tell you no lie, Brendan, I'm great today.
Yeah.
You know, and I can only live in today.
Yeah.
So I don't depend on the poems to cure me or fix me, but they're okay.
Okay.
I get the odd old buzz out of them, you know what I mean? They're not Panadol, but, you know, or they're not Salbutamol, but.
Yeah. So you were 15 when your mother died.
Mm-hmm.
And was it then you started clashing with your father?
Well, the teenage years were particularly difficult with him. But I think he was always, I think there was always some little thing there. But particularly when I was maybe 10, 11, because I wasn't long in the house. Because, I mean, we fought so much that I was just told to go, like, at a certain point. But he was tricky. He would joke a lot. So then when the bullets were flying, they were in with the jokes and you were a bit confused. And then if you weren't going along with the jokey stuff, all right, you've no sense of humour, or, you know, that type of attitude.
Yeah.
So
plausible deniability. All
something.
The time,
yeah. And then when I was getting married, he wouldn't give me away. The clue is in the question, as the state papers say. Not that I ever did a state exam. He wouldn't give me away. And But he came to the wedding in the afternoon. He came later to the wedding.
But so he just explained. So did
he wouldn't give me away. He said, "No, I'm not doing it," and I had to go to the priest.
Why?
It wasn't anything to do with Christy because he really liked Christy. He just wouldn't do it. And then he turned up in the afternoon. Now, it was a Sunday wedding just before Christmas. It was the 23rd of December. And I can't remember his reasons, but there was conflict right there and then that he wasn't going to give me away. And my brother gave me away. But then
you were only 18.
Yeah. That's right. So
that's kind of upsetting, isn't it?
It was upsetting, but you know, it was just a thing. Like, what other template had I? This was my first marriage, for God's sake. Maybe this is the way people go.
Okay.
And I wouldn't know. I mean, I wouldn't have the thing like, what are fathers? Is this what fathers are like, or is this just my father?
And then what? He didn't go to the church and he rocked up later, yeah?
Yeah, he did. And then he was in a couple of photographs with me. And I can't remember if he came for the meal, but I bet you anything he came for the meal. He wouldn't have missed the meal, you know?
Simple as that, like?
I think he was there for
a bit of dinner, like?
It wasn't about the food. It definitely wasn't about the food. I think it was something to do with, I am not giving you away on the one hand. I had no idea why. I didn't know if he hated me. I didn't know if he was jealous of me.
What do you think now? Did he hate you? Was he jealous of you?
I kind of feel there could have been a bit of jealousy there. I don't know, but that is a thought. And I thought maybe, you know, when you're older and you read more and you see different patterns, it could have been a narcissistic personality thingy, but I'm not sure. I'm not a specialist.
And that he thought you were going to have a better life than he had or something, yeah?
Something like that. Couldn't figure it out. He didn't do it with my sister. Yeah, my Mary was married before me and he was there. But it's like, it's interesting. What's interesting for me is the not giving me away. Did he want to keep me? That'd be what I'd hold on to, but...
Okay, so will we have a poem? This is about you and your father back in the day.
Yes.
And it's called Almost Communication.
And it takes in this thing of the jibing, you know, communicating through joking. Almost communication. My father just passed me in his Fiat 127. I was cycling my bicycle hideous. They stopped at O'Mara's for the Connacht Tribune. As I passed, I shouted "Roadhog" in the window. The occupants laughed. Before this, he owned a Renault 12. We called it the Ballyhawness Cow Killer. Later we met outside the sisters. Wouldn't you think he'd buy you a decent bike, the miser? If he had your money, I said, and we laughed. The neighbours with their ears to the rose bushes think that we're great friends. I haven't seen his eyes for years.
Yeah, how we laughed.
Yeah.
So the thing is, you wouldn't be a stranger to the old black humour yourself, like. And I mean, I know you're in a nice, respectable port now, but you can be caustic kind of person.
Is
that him in you, like?
Well,
even
that's
though
that's the demon coming out, you know. That's the Connemara. Well, he was from Litchermore, but you know what I read? Like when I read O'Kine, I said to myself, my father said that. You know, O'Kine wrote about spite and gangage and things like that. And I would see in Connemara, in that particular Connemara writer, and in Miles Nagapillin as well, I would see things that my father said. I would read them and I'd say, it must be Connemara. But it's not fair to blame Connemara for everything.
No, but I suppose, as much as it's a beautiful place now, it was a hard old...
It was a hard life, and his mother died when he was very young. I have a theory that he mightn't have known how to love, but I think it's a bit much of me to say it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just feel you'd come across a person in your lifetime, perhaps, that didn't know how to love.
The thing is, a girl needs her father. I would have thought a girl needs her dad to think like she's the number one person in the world. He should be your biggest supporter.
I know. Like. And I know you're an old patha and everything, but you know when that Tim Walls son jumped up and said, That's my dad.
Yeah.
That, I actually burst into tears. I thought, oh my God, I was never proud of my father, ever, ever, ever. I was never proud of him. And I had some quite violent thoughts about him. I worked in a chemical factory. We used to make rat poison. And I thought sandwich be all over.
He probably had it hard too, though. If your
brother
died when you were young and there were 11 of them.
Yeah,
children.
Well, he married the next year. He married in July.
What did he work at?
He was a soldier and he worked in ANCO. And he was a sergeant in the army. But he did have a very hard life because he was, you know, farmed out when he was a young fella. You know, his father went to America. His mother had died. His father went to America and he went into the army very young. So he wouldn't. And then he had 11 kids, you know what I mean? So I'm
the
sure
farmed
was,
out was a thing back then as well, wasn't it?
It was.
This would be an aunt and an uncle who didn't have a child of their own, maybe to help in the farm or the house.
Yes, but they weren't even related to him. It was out in Menlo he was sent. So it was very hard on people. You know, I actually pity him.
Yeah. But still, back to that thing and back to you seeing Tim Walz's son and everything. It must undermine your sense of yourself, without getting into amateur psychology. But they would say these are the primary relationships that form how we relate to everyone else. Then,
that young lad, I thought, oh my God, how beautiful! And him, we could only read his lips. You know, he was saying, that's my dad.
Yeah.
And I even, like the researcher was saying, you know, it's okay to mention your dad. I would never call my father dad. He was father, and in the memoir, he was a father. A father said, a father did, because it would give me the detachment. And he rang me once, and he said, this is dad. And I said, dad, who? You're going to fall apart.
No, there were two years, or one and a half at least. But I mean, I don't blame you or anything. How did it affect you? Do you carry wounds?
No, well, like I feel everything physically. I get if anything upsets me emotionally, I feel that physically. Like I feel I've been shot with a pellet gun. Like I feel my hips have pellets in them and my shoulders. And I have pain when I sleep, but I'm generally grand, do you know?
Yeah.
Really and truly, but things affect me physically.
Okay, so you think you're probably shipping a bit of shrapnel in there?
Oh, definitely. I can land a few bullets myself, but
yeah.
I couldn't. I think in all conscience, I wouldn't. If I deliberately hurt someone, it would bother me great. I'd be ashamed of myself. It wouldn't be right.
So what happened then? Did you become estranged?
I was on the David Hanley show. Do you remember Hanley's People?
Mm.
And I don't know what I said on it, but the messenger was sent up to me anyway that I was barred from his funeral and that I was never to darken his door again. But I actually...
How long ago was this?
That was... 96 he died. So whenever that programme was... I don't know when it was. I'm not good on numbers.
Yeah. I suppose my point is, was he dying at that stage?
He was not.
Okay, but he was still looking ahead to the funeral. Didn't want you there.
I actually thought that was Shakespearean. You know, I thought, fuck it, I never think of that one.
Yeah.
You know, you're barred for my funeral. It was a good strike, like.
Hit hard, yeah?
It was a good strike. I wouldn't have thought of it. I thought, geez, he has one. He definitely has one on me there now, you know.
So he put work into it. You could admire the effort he went into precision, yeah?
He was worn out with me. And then I met him then maybe a couple of years later. I had presents for him and I said to David Hanley, someday all his birthdays will come together. But I also
Hang on. You bought a present.
I bought him presents for the birthdays.
Every year?
Yeah.
What was that about?
Not every year, but Condor Plug and Nuala Ní Gonail poems. Not every year, but I did buy presents for him that I never gave him. And then I said that on
the
telly.
You'd buy them?
I'd buy them.
With the intention of giving them to him?
Someday. You know, I might give them to him someday, but I never did. But anyway, I might have said that on that programme, and I might have said, I don't think he's a very nice person. I can't remember what I said, and I don't have the programme. So, but whatever it was, barred from the funeral. But then I met him a few years later. So I was barred then from everything. And then I met him at the square and he said, I have cancer and I'm not doing too well. And I was sorry for him, really. And I visited him in hospital. So I felt that the funeral ban was then kind of lifted.
Mm-hmm.
And because people, like, there was somebody did say to me at the funeral, I thought you were barred from the funeral, but don't get me going about funerals. But anyway, so I went to visit him in the hospital. He was a bit of a whinger too, but funny. And he'd be saying, oh, the nurses fancy me. And someone was up with Swiss roll. And then when I was gone, he said to me, we had a thing about Silvermans because they used to bring Silvermans back from the pictures. You know, you'd get a Silvermint, you'd be delighted.
When you were small.
Small. So he offered me a Silvermint and I said, I'll take one. And he said, take one for the bus. And I thought, Jesus, that was the most tender moment I ever had with him in my whole life. So I know you're a path and also I'll start crying.
And do you think he meant it to be tender? Was it some effort by him?
I think he probably found me hard to communicate with because I wasn't obedient.
Yeah, but at the end there, so you went to see
him. We had that tender moment.
Yeah, and he meant it as a tender moment. He was trying to reach out to something that he was incapable of.
Yeah,
was he?
It was very nice. It affected me deeply. And the night he died, I wasn't with them, but I was very agitated. I didn't know he was dying, but I was very agitated. And I was told the next day he died at 3 a.m. And I was very agitated that night, the whole night. I was as giddy, you know. So there was some in tune. I was in tune at some level. But I'm not going around now, you know, suffering as a result of. I probably should see a shrink sometime and get it all out, which I've done it today.
We're working it out here.
How
does that make you feel, Rhiannon? So come here. Did you grieve?
I was delighted when he was dead, to be honest with you. But I had written a short poem then sometime, and I shouldn't be saying it today because it's not in the book and it's another book. It was called Pater, because I would, the Latin for father. And in the poem I said, I was dodging him for years. Now he's dead, I'm dying for his shadow. Simple as, that was the poem. So I was conflicted because I was glad he was dead. I thought I don't have to feel guilty about ever going up there to visit him again, especially at Christmas time. I hated those Christmas visits. And I thought, it's the end of a chapter. I have to move on now, you know. And I think I did.
Did you miss him, though, in a weird way, yeah?
I didn't miss him. I dreamt about him a few times. And in the dreams, he was always in a nice garden with the light to his back. And I thought, Jesus, he's up in a nice place.
He landed on his feet.
He landed on his feet.
And left you here dealing with it, trying to get it out with poems, yeah. Listen, it's an odd conversation to have in a way, right? It's a conversation you don't hear every day. But I bet you there are so many people out there who have parents who couldn't love them or didn't love them or all that kind of thing. And it's such a primal.
But if you have one good, if you have one amazing parent, you will come out of it all right. Because our mother was really different and loving.
Yeah.
And all embracing of all of us.
And she got you far enough.
She saved me, really. You know what I mean? If you have the love from some source, it's nurturing and you'll be okay.
You didn't hang around. So she died at 15. You didn't hang around long then before jumping into an early marriage.
Oh, no,
18,
everything. Yeah. I was actually in Dublin when the night my mother died. I was working. Minding a baby in Dublin at that time. It was Dr. Conway McGee was my mother's doctor, and somebody belonged to Harry McGee. I was working for Harry McGee's aunt in Dublin, minding a baby. And I got the call that my mother was very bad. And that woman that I worked for, she worked in RTE. She was the head of education. But she was beautiful. They were a lovely family. And she drove me to Galway. And when we went, driving into Galway, we met my relations' cars, my aunts and uncles, and my mother had died. I didn't get to see her.
I'm taken by the epigraph in your book. Loss is the greatest two-timer of all. It lets on that everything will be grand, then a wave of grief comes down the road and flattens you. What's that about?
Well, that's not about the dead. That's about the living who are dead to me. Or, you know how you can fall out with somebody. It isn't really that, you know, you can have many kinds of grief. And I grieve for other things as well, you know. And even in friendships, if you have a toxic friendship that you have to cut away from, I'd be grieving for that too, you know. So I think it's OK. I think it was OK to write it.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of people who have maybe a bad family of origin situation or bad for them are really good at then going, I'm going to make my own family now. Mm. And I think you have been really good at that, haven't you? You and Christy.
Well, Christy is a very good, it is good. He has really good karma and good aura. And he's always, he takes my, you know, he has my back, kind of.
Yeah.
And the girls, I have two daughters and four grandsons. And I feel very loved in my unit. You know, I live in a small unit now. You know, my family is small.
Yeah.
And I feel loved. And once you feel loved, you'll thrive.
So Christy, is Christy a nice or more kind of chilled hippie than you?
Oh, he's so chilled. You know, he says to me, he's getting a steering wheel for the left-hand side of the car when I'm in the car with him. He said, I keep forgetting to get that steering wheel. And he says, "Would you know, you just cannot bear the amount of news that I watch, but I'm watching less and listening to less news." Now, he said, how does anybody need CNN that badly? And it's hard. I don't watch it as much now.
What, mental health? Yeah. Why are you cutting down?
No, it's Gaza and it's every, you know what I mean? It's just the inability to take in any more of what's going on in the wars. And then you see this presidential debates and all the rest of it, and you say to yourself, there's a lot of hawks out there, Brendan. You know what I mean? You're looking for the doves, but there's no doves.
Mm-hmm.
Pamela is no dove.
Yeah,
but that's a Shinshkelela. That's another story.
Shinshkelela, you know? And the family. You just use these two words. You're talking in the acknowledgements about, I think, one of the sons-in-law or something, and said he's part of our gang now.
Oh, yeah.
Our gang.
Heather, that's Heather's gang. Yes.
Yeah.
Heather's new partner, Dermot. Hi, Dermot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're very involved with the grandchildren as well.
Yeah, no.
Like so many grandparents out there.
No, yeah, the grandchildren are just the light of our lives, really.
Yeah.
Like, I love to see them coming. Love to see them coming.
So, you feel love now?
Yeah. I do. And really, like, even though I told the Drochskill this morning, I'm doing good.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm fine. And
you like yourself?
I'm not too bad.
Yeah.
I'm not too bad. You know what I mean? I like the book. I'm happy enough with the book. And
yes, the book. Let's not forget the book.
Oh, no, yeah. We can forget the book if you like.
No.
The
Gill team, you've done your bit for them now.
Yeah, I know.
Is it a nice pose, a nice book out? And it is a lovely looking book as well, the jacket and everything.
It's very nice. And it's niche and small and it fits in the bag. And, you know, it just feels good. I have a good feeling about it. You know, that kind of way. And I'm alone myself. That bit of ego about it, that it feels good and that people might like it.
Oh, yeah. I think we're all a load of a bit of ego once, maybe.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
I'll beat myself up for the rest of the day, though.
Yeah. OK, I'm staggered by all that. Lots of text. What a movingly honest interview. To think I took an excellent relationship with my dearly departed dad for granted, brilliantly honest conversation about the complexity of parent-child relationships. Such a joy to listen to an honest person. Listen, there's so many of them saying how honest you are. That would make you nervous, wouldn't it, when people say, you're so honest. And yeah. It's like them saying, you're very brave, aren't you? And you think, really, oh, God.
Yeah. No, I don't mind honest, though. I like to be called honest. It's important, Brendan.
Circa says, such a deep and inspiring wordsmith, Rhiannon, transforming what sounds like a deep father wound endured into poetry is a great piece of alchemy. Very well done. Someone else says, pure magic, such emotion, eloquence and humour. So we will end with a poem from The Long Weekend. My favourite poem in the book is actually about your mother.
Right.
My mother loved me in red.
Okay.
Did you read that?
Absolutely. My mother loved me in red. I saw my mother's grave from the top of the bus recently. She died in 1971. I only saw her grave from this angle a few days ago. I was a great one for the buses years ago. I even wrote a poem about it. Then we got the Arts Council bursary car, and that was the end of the buses for me. Now that I have the bus pass, I'd be inclined to use the bus more often. Plus, I can see my mother's grave from the upper deck. I say nothing to the other passengers as we pass the graveyard, much as I want to shout, inside that wall, four graves into the left, is a good woman, Margaret Mary Higgins, who died age 55. She gave birth to 12. One died at 6 months. Joachim Mary had a hole in his heart. My mother loved me in red. She would say, red is lovely on you. She told me this not often, but as often as she could while the other 10 were out of earshot, which in truth was as likely as a lunar eclipse, a ghost rainbow, or meeting a natterjack on the run.
Brilliant. Rhiannon Higgins, thank you very much. The Long Weekend is out now and it's published, in case you didn't get this message, published by, who's the publisher again?
The Guild team.
The team in Guild, so they practically wrote the poems for her. Thanks, Rhiannon. We'll take a break.